There's some Bible characters that you just enjoy talking about and studying about, and Noah is certainly one of those characters for me. The biblical account of Noah and the Great Flood is a story that just draws you right in, and it's a huge vessel. I guess I mentioned that my plan is, Lord willing, to tie this morning's lesson on the universe and this account of the flood together in a lesson on next Lord's Day morning. So this is one of those, stay tuned. I can't draw you in like the scriptures to get you to where you're just, I can't wait for the sequel. That isn't going to happen, but I hope that to be able to put all these thoughts together in another thought. So tonight, the genealogy of Adam is recorded in Genesis chapter 5. And I want to just make some observations with regards to that, about that genealogy, because it walks us right down to Noah. Noah's great-grandfather was Enoch. And what we know about Enoch is that Enoch walked with God and that Enoch was pleasing to God. In fact, God took Enoch 65 years prior to Noah being born. So Noah was not yet born. This is Noah's great-grandfather, but as we're going to see, these men lived for hundreds of years, and we don't live like they used to live for those kinds of years. In Genesis chapter 5 and verse 22, it says that after he begot Methuselah, Enoch begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years and had sons and daughters. So I want you to just think about someone being faithful for 300 years after their child is born, their son, Methuselah. So for 300 years, we know he's been walking with the Lord. Noah's grandfather is Methuselah. And most everybody knows Methuselah because this was the Bible trivia when you'd say, who is the oldest man in the Bible? And you would say, Methuselah, 969 years old. And you are correct. This is Noah's grandfather. The Hebrew writer in Hebrews chapter 11 and in verse 5, so hold your place back in Genesis, but in Hebrews 11 and verse 5, with regards to this record of those of faith, by faith Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. So you've got Enoch, who has a son named Methuselah, and he is taken and doesn't even die because he pleased God. That was the testimony, that he walked with God and that he also pleased God. And for 300 years, I always find this very encouraging because we tend to want to give out after 10, 15, 20, 30 years, 40 years. These individuals walked and obeyed God for long, long periods of time. It reminds me of Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, because Enoch would have been living this way in front of his son Methuselah. Just like when we study the kings, we have a bad king. We have we talked some about this the other day. We have a child that comes along, but they break that mold and they're a good king. Or you've got the bad king and their son tries to outdo their father. And so it's bad, bad. And that's the influence that they've had. And I'll make some more comments about influence. But what I want you to see right now is that he's been walking in front of his son Methuselah. And in Ephesians 6 and verse 4 is when God tells fathers to bring up their children in the training and admonition of the Lord. So Methuselah is growing up with his father being Enoch, and we'll have more to say that. Noah's father is Lamech, and it's 187 years later that Enoch's grandson, Lamech, is born. So 187 years, and the reason we know that is because in the genealogy it says Methuselah begat Lamech when he was 187. So Enoch has his son 187 years later, comes along Enoch's grandson. Now, Lamech saw his grandfather walking with God and being pleased with him, and I'll talk more about that in just a minute. I mentioned at the start that Noah did not know his great-grandfather Enoch, but he did know his grandfather Methuselah, and he knew his grandfather Methuselah for 600 years. 600 years. You remember he lived 969 years. Methuselah was 369 years old when Noah was born. These are incredible numbers. And his father Lamech, he knew his father Lamech for 595 years. And what that tells you, of course, is that Methuselah, believe it or not, this is right when Noah goes into the ark, Noah is 600 years old. So Methuselah either died in the flood or he died just prior to the flood. And his Noah's dad, Lamech, died 595 years. So he didn't make it to the flood and actually died 5 years before his father. So I got to thinking about this description in chapter 5 and verse 29 when it talks about Noah's name. In chapter 5 and verse 29, he called his name Noah, saying, "This one will comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord has cursed." So Noah means rest. Noah means rest. And so Noah comes along and his name means rest. And specifically, it talks about the land having rest and being able to produce. He would bring comfort. He would bring rest to the ground that the Lord himself had cursed, which is why I had Brother Crossland read Genesis chapter 8, verse 20 to 22. In that text, what is said about Noah and his name and his birth there in 29, he called his name Noah, saying, "This one will comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord has cursed." You go to chapter 8, they come off the ark, a sacrifice is offered, and God lifts the curse on the ground. So there's prophecy and fulfillment of that prophecy through Noah. And his name is God's going to give rest and comfort. And as it says, concerning our work and the toil of our hands. So he had the prophetic pronouncement about what kind of work he would do. Now that's prior and different, or that's rather post, if you would, flood. And we don't think about Noah in that regards. That it, because of Noah and this pronouncement, God no longer cursed the land on the other side of the flood. So that's kind of another interesting thought. So why was Noah selected to build the ark? Why was Noah, of all the people, why was Noah selected to build the ark? Look at chapter 6 and in verse 9 of Genesis. This is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generation. Noah walked with God. Now that's a familiar phrase. See, his great-grandfather Enoch, he walked with God, and God took him. He didn't even die because God took him. And he had this testimony that he pleased God. That was his great-grandfather. But Noah didn't know his great-grandfather. But that's who his great-grandfather was Enoch. And now you find a man who is living in his day and time, and it says in verse 8, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. So our word grace means he found favor, he found acceptance, he found, and this was our lesson last week when I talked about kindness and how important kindness is. It's an attribute of God. That word that we were looking at sometimes is translated grace. It has that connotation of kindness. And so Noah found grace. He found kindness in the eyes of the Lord. He found acceptance, and that is a quality of God, the idea that he is gracious, he is kind. But Noah also, it says, he was a just man. He was righteous. He was doing what God wanted man to be doing. He was a lawful man. He was doing the Lord's will. That's what he was doing. I think of Elizabeth and Zacharias. This would be John the Baptist's parents. You know, the New Testament scriptures open up, and religiously, the Pharisees are, you know, over the top when it comes to the law. They've changed it, the traditions, and there's all that hypocrisy. And who do you have? You have Elizabeth and Zechariah living their life pleasing to God in the midst of all of that. That's what you find. Noah himself living in such a way that he is pleasing to God. Now, you have to ask yourself, is he a superhuman? I mean, really, you think, but this is Noah. This is the Noah. And there's never been another Noah. Was he superhuman? Did God give him some type of special favors to make him this way? The answer is no, because that takes away what we've also talked about, and that is freedom of choice. This was a conscientious decision that Noah was living in such a way that he would be pleasing to God. And we've been talking a lot about influence, and so I said I wanted to show you something else. And thinking of the influence of the people who are in the scriptures, Enoch, for 300 years, it says, for 300 years before Methuselah, his son, and for 113 years, he influenced his son, his grandson, Lamech, Noah's father. And then you've got, well, what about Methuselah? Well, Methuselah influenced his son for 777 years. And that means that he also influenced his grandson for 600 years. So I guess what I want you to, did Noah just wake up? And no, Noah was, these were people in his life that were helping form him and who he is. Lamech, his son, 595 years before he died. And so I'm thinking about influence. The story of Noah is a powerful example of influence on somebody's life. So much of what we've been talking about in the Proverbs, the study of Proverbs. And this isn't just, again, these numbers are hard to contemplate because we know that none of us will live for 113 years even to do that. But we also know why man isn't allowed to live on the earth as long, because God looked and said, boy, they're just mischievous and their thoughts and imaginations are just on evil all the time. So for the remainder of the time, I want to talk about deliverance from the great flood. And again, I want to tie those thoughts, and I'll have to set this up again, Lord willing, next week. But it comes down to faith. If you look at Hebrews chapter 11, and we're going to go look at some of the details. And Craig should be bringing this lesson, because he and Steve, or Steve, because they've made this trip now to the Ark to get an idea of just how massive this thing is. I have yet to do that. But in Hebrews 11 and in verse 7, I think I said 5, by faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. What this means is that Noah had the faith of verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. That's the kind of faith that Noah had. Exactly what is described in the verse preceding what is said about him. Noah diligently sought God. Efforts. This is why it can be rather frustrating. And I know, I'll just admit it, sometimes you can see I get a little frustrated teaching. I hope it doesn't happen often, but I'm thinking, have you done your lesson? Is there any diligence? That is the idea that we're talking about. This is important. It's the most important thing to you. That's what the profession is. So it's like, you know, how little effort. I want you to think with me about what Noah did. Why his faith is a faith worth imitating, though we're not asked to build a gigantic vessel to save ourselves. We have the blood of Jesus Christ, which if you think about it, why God would be very angry if you trod underfoot his son and count it a thing of trash or rubbish. You can understand that because that's what he's done to save us. So Noah diligently sought God. Does that word describe your faith? You search for God, you desire to know him. See, that's why I'm saying it's something that would seem like you would prepare, just like you have to prepare for anything else that you're in your life. There are things that you have to be ready for and you have to do. It just seems like as a Christian, this would be a part. And I'm not judging anybody because I don't look at anybody's books. I don't have you turn in assignments. I don't grade assignments and turn them back. I'm just, you know, that's something that, again, that we need to consider. And the other thing is it says that he was divinely warned of things not seen. It's going to flood, and it's going to rain, and water's going to come, and it's going to rise, and it's going to kill everybody. And you've never seen the first of any of that. And so it makes me think of 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 7. We walk by faith and not by sight. God said it. I don't have to see it. Which is the point we've been making in Proverbs as well. God said, don't do that. I don't have to do that to figure out, don't do that. God said it. I believe it. I will accept that. And I will stay clear of this, or I will do this. And so you've got Noah who diligently seeks after God, and he does these things about things he's not even yet seen. And it's hard to react to things that you have not yet seen, a great flood. Think about the times before we had sirens and we had Doppler radar and all those things. And you remember the other day I said, you know, the siren goes off, and I'm thinking, okay, I need to pay attention. And then some of you that have lived here an awful long time is like, oh, I slept right through it. And I'm thinking, you know, well, I've tried to share with you, two members of the church just lost their life in Indiana because they were camping and the tornado literally killed them right there in their RV. So, I mean, those things happen. Another young couple in Cooksville, Tennessee, the husband and wife and their little child, members of the church. So again, I don't have to see the tornado, and we have those blessings of a warning. So Noah was warned, and he believed it. And so he believed that what God said is going to happen. And so he acted with godly fear or reverence to God. He moved with godly fear. He respected God. He reverenced God. You remember, this is somebody who's diligently seeking to know God. So because he knew God, he took him for what he said, and he feared and respected that and revered God as the Creator, who we talked about this morning, who knows all of these things. And so he didn't just know this, he acted upon this. You see that? He acted upon it. He didn't just, okay, God, I hear you. He actually did what? He prepared the ark. And so that the other part of this is, of course, obedience. And so there are things that we think about. So go back to Genesis, in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 22. he prepared an ark. God said, Noah, I want you to build the ark out of gopher wood. Now, we're not talking about a lesson on authority, but we understand that when God said gopher, that did not make any other wood lawful. Whatever gopher wood might have been, whatever they think it may have been today, Brother Richie was telling me they think it's this particular wood. I don't know. All I know is verse 22 says, thus Noah did according to all that God commanded him, so he did. God said, make it out of gopher wood, and that's what he made it out of. I've made the point before that, you know, you can just picture him picking an area and going, wow, there's all that pine right over there. Why don't we just cut that down and build it? It'd be so much more convenient and easy. Why, we're going to have to go clear over there to get the gopher wood. We're going to have to drag it and haul it. That's what people do in religion all the time, but not Noah. Because he respected and feared God and sought God, he prepared that ark just like God told him to do. So I want to talk to you about that for just a moment. God told Noah to make rooms in the ark in verse 15 of chapter 6, and guess what? That's what Noah did. God told him to make it a specific size. And that's what Noah did. He made it the specific size. The vessel was 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high. And in ancient times, they say, okay, so the cubit was from your elbow to the tip of your largest finger, which would be your middle finger. And I've always been told that's 18 inches. So that's why I've always said, well, the ark was 450 feet by, you know, 75 feet by 45. But some have said, well, no, you know, obviously my distance is going to be different than yours. So I don't know if you just take everybody in the room and measure it and you take an average. But they've calculated it's probably like 20.6 inches. So that makes the ark even larger than what I've always talked about, which is fine. This thing is huge, way you want to talk about. But that translates into it's 550 feet long. And then according to Wikipedia, it's 510 up there, where they tried to imitate this and build something of scale to what they believe it may have been as far as the size. I understand there's a lot of gift shops and things in there that there's a lot of, as you would expect man to do, have a lot of leniency on these things, but I just can't imagine just looking at it to get a feel for it. I always thought it'd be interesting to paste it off and put some flour so you could walk to the other end and say, look how big it is. And it's like my stick man Goliath I did one time. It just doesn't impress you. But I always thought that'd be one way we could do it. Let's start right here, everybody. Let's take this walk down that line and let's see how big this is. But now you've got something that you can actually kind of stare at. So it's 515 or 510. It is 75 feet to 85 feet, depending on which, you know, cubit, wide. And it is 45 to 51 feet tall. So this is a big, big vessel. This is a large vessel. And I cannot imagine the amount of labor that it took to building it. And to do that without the modern day tools. I tell you what, the battery operated drill, that's like a right hand, you know. That thing is a valuable tool. I love it more than having to drag that cord out. And even better is my reciprocal saw, and I'm not sure I'm going to get it back. But, you know, power tools. And to do all this, I can't imagine. And so, and here's something else that you don't really think about. God said in verse 15 of chapter 6, this is how you shall make it. Actually, verse 14, make yourself an ark of gopher wood, make rooms in the ark, and cover it inside and outside with pitch. Well, you know, the pitch is going to make it waterproof. But let me give you an idea of what that means. When we talk about surface area, when we talk about square footage, and so this is 2AB So that would be 2 times A times B. And so what that's doing is that's taken 450 feet by 45. And we get that number and we have to times it by 2 because we're talking about you've got a left side and a right side. All right? And then you go to B and C and you're looking at 45 by 75 and you calculate that and you have to double that because that's the front and the back. We're just making a box. Okay? And then you've got 2A and C, so you've got the 450 by the 40, by the 75, and now you've got that. And you do that, that's like top and bottom. So now you've got a cube. And when you do all that math, you come out with 114,750 square feet. And there's the math for you. And then you have to times that times 2 because you also got to do the inside. And you come up with 229,500 square feet that you have to pitch. And whatever that means. But I suspect if it's a pitch, you can't touch a pine tree without getting sap all over you. You ever try to get, that's not easy to get. The only way I can get it off is I take Lisa's Brillo pad and I put Dawn detergent and I use it to just scrape everything off. Because even grit's hard to get that kind of stuff off, like a pine tar. So again, just give you an idea. I want you to do that, Noah. You imagine painting that? Think about what you would do to put on some kind of pitch, some kind of a tarry substance. And that's what God told you to do. So that's what you do. You pitch it within and you pitch it without. He spent 100 to 120 years. There's some debate as to whether the God made the years of man 120, and that just meant that God gave Noah 120 years. It's 100 to 120 years he spends of his life accomplishing this task. In verse 5 of chapter 7, Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded him. So it's said twice. Whatever God told him to do, that is exactly what he did. And so Noah's obedience, according to Peter in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4 and 5, that made him a preacher of righteousness. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4 and 5. For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and deliver them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of 8 people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly. He was a preacher of righteousness. You know, if people were walking up, looking at what you were doing, you'd be warning them that there's a day of judgment coming. I've been told by the Creator that there's going to be a great flood. And he's building an ark right in front of them. In chapter 6 and verse 9, it also says that Noah was perfect and blameless in his generation. So don't tell me that we can't live right in our day and time. We can and we must. God himself describes man's wickedness as being great when he came down to look. And here's a modern day hero. This is somebody that is a true hero. It is somebody worth our imitation. It is somebody that, especially in a time of wickedness, his righteous walk with God, we're told, condemned the world. And so what that tells me is, well, you can't do that. And he was, yes, Noah did. That's why I say he's not superhuman. God could say, no, this man did it, and he's doing it. You say, yeah, but no, you can too. You have to diligently seek God, and by faith and by godly fear, do his will. That's what you do, and you make up your mind to do that. And so his righteousness is a condemnation against the world. And as was mentioned in the prayer, 8 precious souls were saved on the ark. And those 8 souls replenished the population of the world. God started over and said, you multiply, and that's exactly what they did. And so you and I can as well. Now, faith is not a genuine faith without obedience. And yet the religious world around us tried to say, oh, that's not true. Well, that's a lie. Because a genuine faith is not faith without obedience. There's many people who believe in God. But look at James chapter 2 and verse 13. James chapter 2 and verse 13, where James talks about faith and works. In James 2 and verse 13, for judgment is without mercy to one who has shown no mercy. I'm in the wrong place. Sorry, let me check my note here. Well, it's here. Let me just find it. I'm looking for the devils, or the demons even believe and shudder. Where did I skip? Oh, here we go. Verse 19. You believe that there is one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. So it's more than just believing. They believe in God. The difference is they do not obey Him. And so that's something to think about, not any different than a demon when you don't obey God. So faith is genuine, and it has to have obedience to make it genuine. God gave Noah very specific instructions, and he carried them out. And God reveals His will to us today, and we must obey His instructions. We must. Well, too many like to do it as they please in the name of religion. But they do what they want to please, what pleases them. And yet, Noah did all that God commanded. You see a difference? Well, God won't care about that. Noah did all that God commanded him. And it is a tremendous task in what he accomplished. And so that pleased God. That's why Hebrews 11 and 7 also says, if you'll just flip back, Hebrews 11 and in verse 7 says, and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. He pleased God. He found favor in the eyes of God. He walked with God. He did as God commanded. And that makes him an heir of righteousness. And so, how are you going to be an heir of righteousness? I'd follow the way Noah walked, wouldn't you? I would do as Noah did. And so if you want to know how to be pleasing to God, well, follow Noah's example and walk with God year after year. I'm also struck with that last thing, year after year after year after year. I heard Dee Bowman years ago speak on hope. And he had a powerful way of drawing your emotions out. And he said, don't you quit on me. And when Brother Bowman looked at you and said that, you knew he meant it. He would say, don't you quit on me. You can do this year after year after year. But it's a mindset, isn't it? Noah made up his mind. And Noah was walking in such a way that it was pleasing to God. And that way was according to the will of God. And God selected him for this task. And he accomplished it. And he saved his family. And we are all descendants now of Noah then, aren't we? Every last one of us have come from Noah and his family. Think about that. Your great, 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 whatever was Noah. Now, which one of the sons, Shem, Ham, or Japheth? I couldn't tell you. But you know you came from Noah. Well, the lesson is yours. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we want to encourage you to take advantage of the opportunity that you have to be saved from your sins. There's only one way to do that, and God has declared that is through His Son. So once you come in obedience to Jesus, He lovingly invites you. My yoke is easy, my burden is light. The things that He asks us to do is not meant to tread us down and bog us down and make it difficult. The things he has asked of us is to give us the best opportunity to have an enjoyable, fruitful life, to be able to navigate all of the trials of life. But you must get rid of your sin because he is a holy God. If we can help you do that, we want to help you do that. If you're a child of God and something is amiss, why not make yourself right with God before it's everlastingly too late, as we stand and sing our invitation song.